Welcome to Therapist Off Script, a podcast designed with therapist in mind as we discuss all things psychotherapy practice, the good, the bad, and the truly mind-blowing adventures of being a therapist in process. Hang on as we dive deep, join together, and empower others for the journey of a lifetime. All right, so today we're going to talk about some key ideas around the experience of being in the season of a trainee. Welcome to Therapist Off Script. We are two therapists, Jen and
Alex, in the mental health and wellness space, coming together from different points in our profession
to unlock the world of healing arts and all that it holds of being a psychotherapist in practice.
Regardless of where we are in the process,
while we are therapists, this podcast is not meant to be therapy or supervision. Should we mention clients, we are committed to safeguarding our client confidentiality.
Please know that information presented here is intentionally de-identified, with details changed and are often a representation of common challenges we witnessed within the struggles of life and simply being a human.
Come spend time with us as we show up as unapologetically us. We are Therapist Off Script. There's always a lot of changes with the BBS that you could feel very lost in it. I know when I was at the very beginning of going into school, like here I am arriving in California. I already have a master's degree in counseling with human services specialization or something. I don't even remember what my first master's was, but it was in counseling, right? I had actually started out as an MFT path and it was in Virginia. And then I finish up that master's degree. I get to California and I'm like, oh, I can just do my intern hours, because we called them interns back then instead of associate. And then I got into the thick of everything that was covered on how to become a licensed professional, a mental health professional. And I was beyond lost, didn't have any networks like I do now or support systems in California, like arriving, didn't know a soul. And I was trying to figure out how to become licensed. So much so that I went back to school for a second master's. So if that tells you anything of how intricately complex the BBS is, let it be that. It was ridiculous.
You basically went back to get a master's specifically so that you have the freaking support to navigate the process that is becoming a licensed clinician in California.
Yes, because I was lost in it. And of course, now knowing what I know, I could have filled in like the courses that I needed, right? But I was like, it's just easier just to start over from ground zero and work my way through and get the skills and resources and support as I go along. So now I have two master's degree in counseling, and I could have been licensed like back in 2011, you know, when I first got to California.
Yeah, but so, you have a broader network now.
I have a broader
met people that you would not have met.
Yeah. So when it comes to looking at the licensure path, when someone is just getting started, like going to school, and they don't know what they don't know, it is overwhelming. And of course, there's a lot of documentation, but it's overwhelming documentation in different places. And of course, there's resources. Kudos to people who come in and try to make it easier to explain it in a very straightforward and plain language way. My hope is with us talking about this, it could be useful to others to be able to come to licensure. And part of it is, you know, you get to know the path through the experience. And so I don't regret going back for a second master's degree, because I learned so much versus my master's degree in Virginia. Funny enough, Virginia is like more rigorous, along with like New York, because in Virginia, you have to have 4,000 hours.
That's right. I remember that.
Yeah, which of course I have, you know, but I don't ever plan on going back to Virginia.
There's a lot of things that I've done in my life that, like, okay, if I had a time machine, would I go back and change it? No, because I am who I am today because of those things. But would I recommend it to others? Or if I had the opportunity to do it differently, would I? No, I would not recommend doing anything that I do for others. And would I do things differently? Yeah, probably.
So if you were reincarnated and you had the choice to live your same life or a different life, it sounds like you're saying you would live your life. So another layer of that question is, if you were able to relive your life, like on repeat, would you want to have the awareness and the knowledge that you hold at this moment in time to take back with you?
Part of me wants to say yes. Mm-hmm. But the other part of me is, well, if I have this knowledge, then I'm not reliving that life.
It's a mind-boggling question, isn't it? It's like an existential question. Okay, enough of that. Why don't you tell me your path from the time you decided to enter school? You've completed 12 semester or 18 quarter units of study. Then you have the opportunity to go into practicum as a trainee.
Yeah.
So tell me, looking back on that time, what are the highlights that you recall as could be beneficial for others knowing current day?
Yeah. So... Okay, so yeah, for us, it was semesters, so the 12 semester units. And I guess I missed this part of my program completely, but apparently it's like the main reason, or one of the main reasons that people apply to this program, is that we actually start seeing real clients in our first year. And I don't know, usually I do my due diligence and research everything and had no idea. Like, oh, cool, they throw us into the fire. So during our first semester in our like MFT Skills 1 class, we did do a couple practice clients where we saw two people. They were like student volunteers for two sessions practicing like the intake process. I'm like, all right, cool. Got that. Know how to do an intake assessment report. We did like a psychoeducation on a particular like grounding technique and then presented on it. Come second semester, we get assigned one client, a real client, and then fast forward a little bit more, we get another client. I got lucky with my very first client, even though also I was definitely freaking out because the demographics were completely different from mine. She was older, had more life experience and trauma, and just culturally different. I was like, oh my gosh, like how am I going to help her? Like we don't relate on anything, or, you know, this is me anxiety, not having a clue or feeling like I have no clue what I'm doing. Yeah. Then I did the first session and it was just like, oh, that was it. I mean, it wasn't like that was it. I just did my first real session and it went well and it was good. And okay. Wow. I don't know why I was thinking all of the things that I was thinking. I mean, anxiety is why I was thinking the things that I was thinking, and imposter syndrome and all those fun mumbo jumbo experiences that we all have and don't like to admit.
But we should admit more so that it's normalized for people first coming into the field, because your experience is a lot of people's experience. There's this anxiety, stress, like, oh my gosh, imposter syndrome. I'm going to fail. People are going to think I'm a fraud. Who am I to tell and walk alongside the client with this? Like, that is a typical experience, but we build it up to such a like a mountain out of a molehill, a majority of us do. And then we actually get into the session, we're like, oh, and we come to a realization, like, I've been doing this naturally. Some of us, not all of us, some of us really have to work hard at it. I do want to mention that as a disclaimer, with us like traveling through the path to licensure, while we can share our own experiences within our path of becoming licensed, it doesn't always represent everybody's experience. And we may mention some legalities or, you know, within it or regulations, but please research this for yourself, because we don't know everything and we can sometimes mess up as humans. And so we will do our best to represent as transparent information as possible, while also considering that please verify this information. Trust but verify, Ronald Reagan, right? And then also when we mention clients, of course, both Alex and I are aware that we're changing some of the specifics with the clients, and it's just a general representation. And so while Alex is talking about her first client, there are some specifics that are being changed to protect the identity of that client. So yeah, just a worth a mention.
Yeah, thank you. And so back to what you were talking about before, I was thinking, you know, with this whole, oh yeah, like we're doing the thing. Literally had a conversation with a friend 2 days ago, I think. So in my program, we get paired. So first years get paired with second years as like a mentor-mentee relationship. My understanding is I think I was the only one in my cohort that like had like further conversations beyond like the first meeting. Like we all like, it was part of a class, like, or class time that we all meet our mentor. And I ended up actually, we'll get there, but the reason that I ended up at my traineeship was really because of my mentor. I wasn't even going to apply. And then I should reach out to her. It's been a little while. Or maybe she didn't respond to me. I'll look back at the messages. But anyway, yeah. So then when I was a second year, then I got to be a mentor. I'm like, oh yes, we're so experienced with this whole 1 year. Yeah, whatever. But then because of my role as the clinic assistant, I was the one that was in charge of like doing the intakes for the potential real clients that would get assigned to the current first years, or the first years that were first years when I was a second year. Mm. And so because of that, I had contact with all of the first years. And so kind of took on the role of like mentor to everybody beyond just the one that's assigned to me. So I took on the role for being a mentor to everybody, just because I was interacting with them anyway, because I have to make sure that they're doing their notes on time or that their clients are paying or whatever. And then additionally, one of the professors had connected me with somebody who was considering applying to the program while I was a second year. So then she would be a first year while the like my mentees become second years. And so she wasn't sure about this program versus another. And so we started chatting and then actually became friends. And so she is a current first year. And so I still talk to her. Her mentor, her second year mentor, is one of my, like, I would consider a close friend. And so I guess I'm like the grand mentor if we go that route. But I was having a conversation with her because she was like, yeah, like you're a therapist too. Like you're doing therapy, you are seeing real clients. That means you're a therapist. And then I was like, you know, sometimes I forget that I'm a therapist also. Like, I don't know. I go through like moments where like, yeah, I'm doing the thing and clients making progress. I get good feedback, yada, yada, yada. And then others I'm like, am I even like, what the fuck am I doing? I'm just sitting here listening. Like, okay. But to be fair, that is sometimes what needs to happen. So I have to remind myself that, yes, I am doing therapy, even if I don't feel like I am. Or, yeah, I don't know. That's also normal. Like realizing, huh, am I even doing anything?
Which yes. Is normal. It's completely normal for those who have like this natural ability of therapy. Like we were probably therapizing when we were in third grade, you know, like people naturally came to me for like, you know, support and for a listening ear, sometimes to like solution seek well before I was a therapist. I just didn't know that I was a natural therapist before. And so when we get into the room with real air quotes clients, real clients, I liked your use of that word, real client, we can sometimes feel like, what the heck, what am I doing? But sometimes the stuff doesn't come naturally to people. It's just inherent within us because of our life path, you know, and it made us who we are. My brain does weird stuff when you're talking, like I get visuals. And so you're like, second year was paired with first year. And I instantly went to Harry Potter.
You know, I did a marathon of all 8 films because we had just finished The Fantastic Beasts. So bring on all the Harry Potter metaphors. I am here for it and I am ready.
Yes. Do you know what it's like to, because in Japan, went to Osaka, Universal. I'm in the Harry Potter world, right? Diagon Alley at Universal in Japan. My husband and my daughter have never read the books or watched the movies. Do you know what it's like to experience a Harry Potter world without someone who doesn't know Harry Potter? I was sad. Like, I was such a nerd going in there, and I got a wand, like one of the interactive ones.
Yeah, you have to.
I got Professor Dumbledore. That's the one I decided on. And I was such a nerd and ecstatic and like happy, but I didn't have anyone to share it with. So it was totally sad. So if you're going to go to Universal, this is completely like digressing. If you have to go with people that speak that language. Yes. This is what my brain does when you're talking. But you are highlighting the importance of having a network and connections, right? We don't realize when we first come into the field how interconnected the mental health field and individuals within it can be. And when we have this abundance mindset versus a scarcity mindset, so a lot of practice will be like, no, those are my clients. No, when we can hone in on an abundance mindset and the interconnections between practices and individuals that make up those practices and have an abundance of supporting one another, that's a beautiful thing. Yeah. And if I could wave my Dumbledore wand and make that happen, I totally would. So,
I mean, really though, the world is small. Like, it is not nearly as big as I would like it to be sometimes. Like, you will run into people. Right. So, and this is something that was instilled in me, like, childhood, like, just performing arts world. You never know who you're going to run into. If somebody could end up being your boss, you had a tiff with them earlier on, they remember it. It might be good for you.
Yeah, and it becomes like a virus. It spreads. So now everyone that individual knows, five other people know about it. And then those five people know another five people, and we're all interconnected. And so you had a second year paired with you as a first year, and you went above and you were able to stay in contact with that person, which led to your trainee site, it sounds like, is what you said. And now you have this opportunity. So looking back, now you're a second year, you're being partnered with a first year. And it sounds like you were made for that position because now you're interconnected with all the first years. And there's certain rock star clinicians who are really built for that kind of position because of the powerful effects that get spread through the webs of our interconnections. So it's beautiful to hear.
It reminds me of like when we were talking about like supervision, and when I had asked you like what led you to be or to want to be a supervisor, and you're like, to give back, because I had a super awesome supervisor and I wanted to do that for other people. And I guess in a way that's me doing it. I don't know if I want to be a supervisor or not. I'm still going back and forth. I mean, we all know at this point it's probably going to be a yes, but at the moment I'm still explicitly verbally saying, I don't know, but I wouldn't be surprised if I do end up going that route for that reason.
Right. And that highlights the seasons of a therapist. I know we've talked about on Becoming a Therapist before, at least I think we have. Every time I read that book, it's like in a different season. And I get different things from it every time I read it. So like being a trainee versus being an associate, you learn a lot versus being licensed, versus being 2 years licensed, 5 years licensed, 20 years licensed. They're different seasons that we go through. And every single day, it's a learning profession. We're learning something every single day. And a lot of times, either my supervisees or my clients are teaching me things also, right? Mm-hmm. And so I am not like the know-it-all kind of therapist where I'm like the authority figure. No, like I'm joining you and we're going to learn from one another. Client, you are the expert. That's the word I was looking for earlier, not authority. You are the expert of your life. I have certain education, experience, skills that comes together through an alchemy, and we're going to create something beautiful together.
Well, and going back to the Mount Everest metaphor, like, yeah, like we're going on this journey together. We are climbing that Mount Everest together, and some hills are going to be easier to climb than others. Sometimes it's downhill. Sometimes we need to take a break. And that means like we are both taking that break. Sometimes client needs to be pushed up the mountain a little bit where we can do that as therapists. And sometimes clients are actually the ones pushing us up the mountain of becoming a better therapist, because sometimes it's challenging. Sometimes it's more challenging than we thought it was going to be. And it makes us a better therapist because of that.
Yeah. Throwback to episode 1.
Yeah.
Okay, so now you're in a trainee site.
So second semester, as far as paperwork goes, that's where you start doing the like the supervisor agreement, and then tracking your like your weekly hours and getting those signed. And speaking of track your hours and the mentorship, like the reason that I have track your hours is because my mentor was the one that recommended it to me, and then I'm recommending it to everybody I know. You don't have to have it. I know there are people that use like Excel spreadsheets or whatever, but I cannot imagine life without track your hours for multiple reasons. So
yeah. And people who are like me, I did both the paper based version of on the BBS site, and I did track your hours, and then I compared them at the end. So I just wanted to make sure all my T's were crossed and all my I's were dotted and everything lined up, and it did. It lined up. So for anybody, like you said, plugging in that wonderful resource, I know a ton of people through my years who have used it. And also when forms are updated, Track Your Hours automatically updates those forms. So as a word of caution, make sure you're getting your hours signed as you're earning them on a weekly, or now they're at 10 spaces, right?
Yeah.
So at least every 10 weeks, you're getting your hour signed, because if those forms get revised, you can't be backdating your forms. So with the BBS. So I did want to say that minimum hours while you're in school is 225 hours of face-to-face experience of individuals and couples, families and groups, 75 of which may be client-centered advocacy. And of course, your school set individual minimums. But just so y'all are aware, the maximum hours is a total of 13 hours of experience may be counted prior to your graduation as a trainee. 1,300. Is that what you're saying?
You said 13.
1,300. I probably got cut out. 1,300. You can only earn 13 hours as a trainee. That's it. Have fun. You've learned it all, right?
That's still 13 more hours than social work and LPCs can count.
It's true. Oh, man. Yeah. 1,300 hours of experience may be counted prior to your graduation. No more than 750 of those hours of counseling and direct supervisor contact hours may be gained prior to qualifying degree. And then, of course, you'll have indirect hours that would make up the difference of 1,300 minus the 750. So a little bit of math there.
I think I finished my hours, or at least almost finished my hours, with like by the end of the first semester of second year. And others were struggling to finish their hours by the end of, like, towards the deadline of second semester upon graduation. So every supervisor is different. And that goes back to finding the supervisor match. And this, you know, I think with that conversation, we were talking specifically about like associate positions and supervisors, but this would be something to consider as a trainee, like what counts as indirect hours, or what, you know, what the process is as far as client advocacy, because that could make or break your decision to find a traineeship as well.
Yeah, those are good questions. It goes back to like the interviewing, right? To ask those questions, because as you pointed out, you have direct client counseling, and then you have indirect. And indirect, I don't have the form in front of me, but it's like client advocacy, workshops, trainings. Do you recall?
Progress notes. Yeah. I have track your hours.
Okay, right, perfect. Now. Go for it.
So the non-clinical practice hours or indirect hours include workshops and training, psych tests, reports and progress notes, client-centered advocacy, and the supervisions, individual, triad, and group.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so knowing the different categories, looking at your hours log, and really educating yourself and looking at the BBS site, because if you go to publications, there's like frequent questions, like read those things. There's another one on there, like guide to becoming an LMFT. That's not the exact words, or maybe it is, I don't know. But definitely read all of those things. There's also one that recently came out in March, April. It's called the Master Checklist for MFT Licensure, Your Tactical Tool for Ultimate Success. It was updated in 2022, March, April edition of the Therapist Magazine for anyone who has a CAMT, California Association of Marriage and Family Therapists subscription.
Which we also recommend, by the way.
We also recommend, absolutely, if for nothing else, to stay like in tune to the field, but also you can call one of their attorneys if you're in a bind to be able to get information. When I was reading through this in preparation for the podcast, there was some discrepancies that were part of this. And it's mainly not because of the person not writing well, because it's a very well-written article and I highly recommend it. It's just because there's been some changes that have happened. So for example, in the article, this person, Anne Tran Lean, I'm probably really butchering her name, but she's a staff attorney with managing director of legal affairs at CAMF. She talks about in the article, the supervision, supervisor responsibility statement. And of course, as we know, effective January 1st, 2022, that is converted over to a supervision agreement for the different LCSW, LMFT, LPCC, and so on. But she doesn't have the updated language to that. And then I found out that also on top of that, so you have the supervisor responsibility statement for anyone prior to January 1st, 2022, the supervisor agreement for anyone after January 1st, 2022 on the BBS site. If you started supervision prior to January 1st, 2022, you also have to have that supervisory plan in place for any supervisors that you had, even if it was a pre-existing relationship within supervision. So yeah, so good things to know. And another reason to really stay in tune. One thing that I would recommend is subscribing to the BBS newsletter so that you get those updates in your email. So.
And follow them on Instagram. And if you ever have to contact the BBS, I've gotten faster responses through Instagram. Next would be email, and don't even bother calling. So if you have any questions about really anything involving BBS or the applications or the forms, et cetera, I recommend Instagram, DM them on Instagram or email, and then don't bother calling. And then anything like clinical questions, really, I mean, clinical or BBS, anything, ask CAMF. And there's been a couple times where even like I'll bring some issue up to a supervisor and we end up both calling CAMF just to verify, or if I can't get a hold of my supervisor soon enough and I want answers sooner, then I'd call.
Yeah, it's like your lifeline. It's like a safety net to get someone who is educated in the different law and ethics. And then whatever information you gain from there, that can just get put straight into your progress note, you know? Yeah. So it's a protection. So,
yeah.
Okay. So let's get back to your path. I keep like leading us off in different directions. So I apologize for that. And also we're getting some really good stuff from it. So
yeah, let's see. Okay. So practicum, you apply to your traineeships sometime during second semester. Our school had like a fair, like a career fair or whatever. And not all of the sites had representatives come. I mean, just busy schedules, all of that. And we did have a representative for my traineeship site, but it was called Christian Counseling Services at the time. And like, well, I'm not Christian. Like, I don't know. Like, but my mentor, she had asked like if I was applying there and I said no. And she's like, so they're changing their name. It's a misconception. They don't like, it's straight up therapy. So yeah. I wasn't going to apply to the traineeship that I ended up getting because the name was kind of misleading. So I wasn't really sure if that's the route that I wanted to go. But then my mentor, she had asked me if I was applying there and I said no. And I told her why. And she's like, yeah, a lot of people have the same thoughts or the same trepidation. Is that the word, or hesitancy? Yeah. So then she reassured me, no, that's not the case. It's a great place. This is what they do here. Yada, yada, yada. I'm like, oh, yeah. Okay. That's what I want to do. This is the place for me. And just every conversation that I had with her and the clinic assistant who was the clinic assistant when I was the first year also was there. So then I built a relationship with her and then I became the clinic assistant. It just kind of passes down. And ironically, the when I was a second year, the assigned mentee that I got, even though I took the role on for everybody, she's the clinic assistant now. So it's a pay it forward type thing there too, or whatever. But yeah,
should like live this experience is always looking to pay it forward, because yeah, we're all going to be stronger together because of it.
Yeah, absolutely. So I applied, and that was the process of applying to sites. I think I applied to 9, I want to say, and ultimately I got into 7 of them. But the issue was, the very first site that I applied to, they gave me an offer on the spot, wanted an answer by the end of the week. So I ended up saying no. The one that I really wanted is the very last site that I had that they were doing the interviews for. And so then I got offers in various places and time frames, and wanting answers in different time frames. It got to the point where, like, what do I do? Because I haven't even interviewed for the site that I really want, but everybody else needs answers now. Do I risk like saying no to them and just hope that I get the site that I want, or risk not getting in there and then having to scramble? And I did everything that I possibly could to make it so that I don't have to be in that position to stress and find a site. So I didn't want to be in that position. So I applied to 9. Other people were like, oh, I'm only applying to 1 or 2. Okay, good for you. I'm not that confident in myself, but yay for you. So I ended up, I did it. I said no to everybody and just, I ended up right back where I was worried that I was going to end up, but for a different reason. And I realized it's a good problem to have. Like, oh, woe is me. I got accepted to like 7 out of the 9 places, but it was not a fun place at the time. So then I applied, I interviewed, and then I got in. Mm-hmm. And that was one of the biggest reliefs. But I think I was still, I forget how long it took to get the answer, because I did remember there were 2 other people that had not gotten a site yet. And then we had to like go through like, here's a backup list of other places that maybe you can try applying to, or like go on Indeed and find stuff. I ended up in that same boat. Like, well, I'm just paranoid, like, just in case I don't get this and I should, you know. And I mean, worst case scenario, my plans were apply to other places and hope that I get one of those, reach back out to the places that said yes, but I said no to, and see if mm-hmm. anybody else, like if they happen to have a spot open.
Yeah.
It didn't come to that. And so then I got to my traineeship, did all those forms. And yeah, so I was a trainee. I started fall of 2020. So the first semester of my being in the traineeship, of course you're doing the traineeship while also doing classes. Second year coursework was lighter though, and they do that, you know, because we have the 20 hours traineeship. Yeah. But so half of that was the supervisor responsibility statement. And I also actually ended up starting with my traineeship experience. We were supposed to start, or I was supposed to start August, which is closer to when the school year starts. But then they, because COVID, and they had closed a lot of stuff, and they wanted to reopen the supervised family visitations, and they needed somebody to start earlier, they chose me. And like, yeah, well, I'm going to have to move down to SoCal a lot earlier, and we'll have to do long distance or whatever. But yes, I'm going to do it. I'm glad I did. There was an issue with the 90-day rule, because we were on semesters and it was literally 4 days off. There were 94 days between the last day of second semester first year and first semester of second year. Mm-hmm. The program director like busted his ass, like trying to deal with BBS. Like, is there anything? Yeah, no, they weren't budging.
No, they weren't.
Yeah. But I'm glad that even though I was the one that figured it out, I mean, this was the first year that they switched from quarters to semester, so it was not an issue before, but he busted his ass and created a practicum class over the summer so that I can count my hours. Wow. Because there was no, I was going to get too many hours for it to be like, there's no way I'm not counting these. Other people, if they started earlier, I mean, it was their choice, because you had to pay extra because it didn't, the loan or not loan, but whatever, did not cover. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Financially, it does not cover summer, I think, is what happened.
Yeah.
But yeah.
So You're highlighting the 90-day rule. It applies mm-hmm. between semesters, and it also applies after graduation, getting your associate number in and getting your live scan done. And then this also kind of branches off with, as a trainee, you can only work in a government site, a school-based site, or like a nonprofit, government entities, those kind of like locations, right? You cannot be an associate, you cannot be in a private practice or corporation until you actually physically, not physically, but it's populated on the BBS Breeze that your associate number has been issued. One thing I do want to point out with supervision ratio as a trainee, for every 5 direct client hours, you have to have 1 unit of supervision. And I say unit instead of hours because 1 hour of individual is 1 unit, 1 hour of triadic, which is equivalent to individual, is 1 unit, 2 hours of group is equivalent to 1 unit. Well, you have to have 52 weeks of individual or triadic during that first year of supervision contact. If you have group on top of that, so say you have 10 client hours for that week, then you need 2 units. That could be 1 unit of individual or triadic plus a group, 2 hours of group would give you enough for the 10 direct client hours. And notice I'm saying direct client hours versus indirect, because your indirect workshops and, you know, progress notes and all of that, but you have to have at least 1 unit of individual or triadic to be even count the experience for that week. So very tricky, very intricate. But that's where I come back to, I highly recommend knowing your stuff so you don't miss out on any of those valuable hours. Because in the beginning, when you're starting, you're like, oh, 1 or 2, blah, blah, blah. When you were getting towards that 3,000 hours, which is required to be licensed, those little 1s and 2s are going to like make a huge difference to you to finishing well. So within your trainee site, what are like the top things that you think, looking back now, that you think someone who's entering into a trainee site, what are like those highlights that you would want to like want people to know?
Embrace the imposter syndrome. Embrace the fact that you do not know everything. And you don't have to. You are not expected to know everything or be perfect. Supervision, consultation, all of those are there for you to learn and grow and take advantage of the support system you have. Like, I think, I don't know, again, maybe I was lucky with all of the supervisors that I had. And I had a few of them because my first one went on maternity leave. And then and she was the group and individual supervisor. Then we switched to another supervisor who was the clinic director too, and she was doing individual and group for me. And then she ended up taking away the group. So then somebody else came in to do the group supervision, but I still had the clinic director as my individual supervisor. But all, so I guess, yeah, 3 supervisors within that 1 year. All of them have been fabulous and a huge part of my journey, in even like, as intimidating as it may have been at the time, like, oh my gosh, like the clinic director, like she's got all this experience, or like all of these people have so much experience, I feel like I'm not worthy or whatever. Like, no, I am the person I am today because they pushed me to become the person I am today, or the therapist at least. Mm-hmm. So take advantage of the support, ask questions, ask for feedback. Take the feedback.
Yeah, be open to feedback, especially when it's constructive in nature and not deteriorating in nature. When it's constructive, it's growth producing, and it allows you to level up. Yeah. And leveling up is so very important.
Yeah, well, and I think the thing for me, one of the biggest things that came up was, I mean, I welcome feedback. I always take it. I welcome it. So whenever somebody gave me feedback, I would accept it and be super receptive to it. I didn't explicitly ask for it as much as I feel like I should. Yeah. I wish, so if I were to go back in time, I would have asked more explicitly, like, hey, can you tell me, like, is this good or is this not, or what could I do better, rather than just hoping that they'll bring it up first.
That's a good piece of advice for sure. Yeah, not being afraid to ask the questions, even as someone who is licensed for 20 years, should still have questions, because it makes us sharp and in tune to the mental health field. And when you stop learning, that's when you stop growing, you know, obviously. So like, don't be afraid to ask questions regardless of where you are on the path. Good advice. Yeah.
And I'm going to leave with shout out to Beth, Carrie, and Aaron. Thank you.
Who were Beth, Carrie, and Aaron?
Those are the supervisors that I had during my traineeship.
Very good. Very good. Awesome. I did want to give one more resource. I know we only got a couple minutes left and I have a client right after this, but Dr. Ben Caldwell with Ben Caldwell Labs wrote an excellent article back in, I believe it was December of 2021, in preparation for the January 1st updates that were rolling out. And it's titled "Major Changes Are Coming to California BBS Supervision Rules in 2022. That is another excellent resource that I would highly recommend. It highlights the differences of what we were talking about earlier when things went from supervisor responsibility statement to supervision agreement. He does a great job in breaking it down and making it highly understandable. He is someone who is very much a pay it forward type of individual. So good resource. Okay, so next podcast, we will be covering associate time and the ins and the outs and everything in between. I always feel like I'm on a roller coaster when I say that. The ins, the outs, and everything in between. Time goes too fast.
Yes.
If you'd like to hear more, please do not forget to like and subscribe on your favorite platform.
You can learn more about us at therapistoffscript.com or by visiting us on Instagram at therapistoffscript.
We welcome connections, comments, and feedback,
or to simply say hi,
by engaging with us on Instagram or through our website.
Thanks for spending time with us today, where we dive deep, join together, and empower others. We are Therapists Off Script.
Be sure to check out our show notes for links and resources shared within this episode. As always, if y'all have questions or insights or stories that you want to share, you can reach us at Therapist Off Script on Instagram or directly through our website. I'm watching you because I didn't mess it up. Always going to be a thing. As yeah. I'm saying it, I'm like, I better be the one to say it or Alex is going to like pause.
Never living it down. That's for damn sure. Mm-hmm.
Eventually, we'll pass it.